Chapter 18. How God is the end of things. It remains to ask how God is the end of all things, and this shall be made clear from what has been said, for he is the end of all things, yet so as to precede all in being. Now there is an end which, though it holds the first place in causing, forasmuch as it is in the intention, is nevertheless last in execution. This applies to any end which the agent sets up by his action. Thus the physician by his action sets up health in the sick man, which is nevertheless his end. There is also an end which, just as it proceeds in causing, so also does it proceed in being, even so that which one intends to acquire by one's motion or action, is set to be one's end. For instance, fire seeks to reach a higher place by its movement, and the king seeks to take a city by fighting. Accordingly, God is the end of things as something to be obtained by each thing in its own way. Again, God is at once the last end of things, and the first agent, as we have shown. Now the end effected by the agent's action, cannot be the first agent, but rather is it the agent's effect. God, therefore, cannot be the end of things, as though he were something effected, but only as something already existing and to be acquired. Further, if a thing act for the sake of something already in existence, and if by its action some result ensue, something through the agent's action must accrue to the thing for the sake of which it acts. Thus soldiers fight for the cause of their captain, to whom victory accrues, which the soldiers bring about by their actions. Now nothing can accrue to God from the action of anything whatever, since his goodness is perfect in every way, as we proved in the first book. It follows, then, that God is the end of things, not as something made or effected by them, nor as though he obtained something from things, but in this way alone, that things obtain him. Moreover, the effect must tend to the end, in the same way as the agent acts for the end. Now God, who is the first agent of all things, does not act as though he gained something by his action, but as bestowing something thereby, since he is not in potentiality so that he can acquire something, but solely in perfect actuality, whereby he is able to bestow. Things therefore are not directed to God, as to an end that can gain something, but that they may obtain himself from him according to their measure, since he is their end. Chapter 19. That all things tend to be like unto God. From the fact that they acquire the divine goodness, creatures are made like unto God. Wherefore, if all things tend to God as their last end, so as to acquire his goodness, it follows that the last end of things is to become like unto God. Moreover, the agent is said to be the end of the effect, forasmuch as the effect tends to be like the agent. Wherefore the form of the generator is the end of the act of generation. Now God is the end of things in such wise as to be also their first active cause. Therefore all things tend to a likeness to God, as their last end. Again, things give evidence that they naturally desire to be, so that if any are corruptible, they naturally resist corruptives, and tend to where they can be safeguarded, as the fire tends upwards and earth downwards. Now all things have being in so far as they are like God, who is self-subsistent being, for they are beings only by participation. Therefore all things desire as their last end to be like God. Further, all creatures are images of the first agent, namely God, since the agent produces its like. Now the perfection of an image consists in representing the original by its likeness thereto, for this is why an image is made. Therefore all things are for the purpose of acquiring a divine similitude, as their last end. Again, each thing by its movement or action tends to some good as its end, as proved above. Now a thing partakes of the good, in so far as it is like to the sovereign goodness, which is God. Therefore all things, by their movements and actions, tend to a divine likeness as their last end. Chapter 20. How things imitate the divine goodness. From what has been said, it is clear that the last end of all things is to become like God. Now, that which has properly the aspect of an end, is the good. Therefore, properly speaking, Things tend to become like to God for as much as He is good. Now, creatures do not acquire goodness in the way in which it is in God, although each thing imitates the divine goodness, according to its mode. For the divine goodness is simple, being, as it were, all in one. Because the divine being contains the whole fullness of perfection, as we proved in the first book. Wherefore, since a thing is good so far as it is perfect, God's being is His perfect goodness. For in God, to be, to live, to be wise, to be happy, and whatever else is seen to pertain to perfection and goodness, are one and the same in God, as though the sum total of His goodness were God's very being. Again, God's being is the substance of the existing God. But this cannot be so in other things. For it was proved in the second book, no created substance is its own being. Wherefore, if a thing is good so far as it is in nothing is its own being, none is its own goodness, but each one is good by having a share of good, even as by having a share of being it is a being. Also, all creatures are not placed on the same level of goodness, for in some the substance is both form and actuality, such, to wit, as are competent, by the mere fact that they exist, to be actually and to be good, whereas in others, the substance is composed of matter and form, and such are competent to be actually and to be good, but by some part of their being, namely their form. Accordingly, God's substance is His goodness, whereas the simple substance participates goodness, by the very fact that it exists, and a composite substance, by some part of itself. In this third degree of substances, diversity is to be found again in respect of being. For in some composed of matter and form, the form fills the entire potentiality of matter, so that the matter retains no potentiality to another form, and consequently neither is there in any other matter a potentiality to this same form. Such are the heavenly bodies, which consist of their entire matter. In others the form does not fill the whole potentiality of matter, so that the matter retains a potentiality to another form, and in another part of matter there remains potentiality to this form, for instance in the elements and their compounds. Since, then, privation is the absence in substance of what can be in substance, it is clear that together with this form which does not fill the whole potentiality of matter, there is associated the privation of a form, which privation cannot be associated with a substance whose form fills the whole potentiality of matter, nor with that which is a form essentially, and much less with that one whose essence is its very being. And seeing that it is clear that there can be no movement where there is no potentiality to something else, for movement is the act of that which is in potentiality, and since evil is the privation of good, it is clear that in this last order of substances, good is changeable, and has an admixture of the opposite evil, which cannot occur in the higher orders of substances. Therefore the substance answering to this last description stands lowest both in being and in goodness. We find degrees of goodness also among the parts of this substance composed of matter and form. For since matter considered in itself is being in potentiality, and since form is its act, and again since a composite substance derives actual existence from its form, it follows that the form is, in itself, good. The composite substance is good as having its form actually, and the matter is good, as being in potentiality to the form. And although a thing is good in so far as it is a being, it does not follow that matter, which is only being potentially, is only a potential good. For being is predicated absolutely, while good is founded on order. For a thing is said to be good, not merely because it is an end, or possesses the end, but even though it has not attained the end, so long as it is directed to the end, for this very reason it is said to be good. Accordingly, matter cannot be called a being absolutely, because it is a potential being, whereby it is shown to have an order towards being, and yet this suffices for it to be called a good absolutely, on account of this very order. This shows that the good, in a sense, extends further than being, for which reason Dionysius says that the good includes both existing and non-existing things. For even non-existent things, namely matter considered as subject to privation, seek a good, namely to exist. Hence it follows that matter also is good, for nothing but the good seeks the good. In yet another way, the creature's goodness falls short from God's, for, as we have stated, God, in his very being, has supreme perfection of goodness. Whereas the creature has its perfection, not in one thing but in many, because what is united in the highest is manifold in the lowest. Wherefore, in respect of one and the same thing, virtue, wisdom, and operation are predicated of God, but of creatures, in respect of different things. And the further a creature is from the sovereign goodness, the more does the perfection of its goodness require to be manifold. And if it be unable to attain to perfect goodness, it will reach to imperfect goodness in a few respects. Hence it is that although the first and sovereign good is utterly simple, and the substances nearest to it in goodness approach likewise thereto in simplicity, yet the lowest substances are found to be more simple than some that are higher, elements, for instance, than animals and men, because they are unable to reach the perfection of knowledge and understanding, to which animals and men attain. From what has been said, it is evident that, although God possesses his perfect and entire goodness in respect of his simple being, creatures nevertheless do not attain to the perfection of their goodness through their being alone, but through many things. Wherefore, although each one is good inasmuch as it exists, it cannot be called good absolutely if it lack other things that are required for its goodness. Thus a man who, being despoiled of virtue, is addicted to vice, is said indeed to be good in a restricted sense, namely as a being, and as a man, but not absolutely. In fact, rather should he be called evil. Accordingly, it is not the same in every creature to be and to be good, although each one is good, inasmuch as it exists, whereas in God to be and to be good are simply one and the same. If, then, each thing tends to a likeness to God's goodness as its end, and a thing is like God's goodness in respect of whatever belongs to its goodness, and the goodness of a thing consists not merely in its being, but in whatever is required for its perfection, as we have proved, it is clear that things are directed to God as their end, not only in respect of their substantial being, but also in respect of such things as are accidental thereto and belong to its perfection, as well as in respect of their proper operation, which also belongs to a thing's perfection. Chapter 21. That things have a natural tendency to be like God for as much as he is a cause. It is clear from the foregoing that things have a tendency to be like God also in the point of their being causes of others. For the creature tends to be like God by its operation. Now, by its operation, one thing is the cause of another. Therefore things tend to a divine similitude in this also, that they are causes of other things. Again, things tend to be like God, for as much as he is good, as stated above. Now it is out of his goodness that God bestows being on others, for all things act for as much as they are actually perfect. Therefore all things seek to be like God, by being causes of others. Moreover, order towards good is itself a good, as we have shown above. Now everything for as much as it is the cause of another, is directed to a good, for good alone is caused per se, and evil is caused only by accident, as we have proved. Therefore it is a good to be a cause of others. Now in respect of any good to which a thing tends, that thing's tendency is to a divine similitude, since every created good is by reason of a share in the divine goodness. Therefore things tend to a divine likeness by being causes of other things. Again, that the effect tends to be like the agent, amounts to the same as that the agent causes its likeness in its effect, for the effect tends to the end towards which it is directed by the agent. Now the agent tends to assimilate the patient to itself, not only in respect of its being, but also in respect of its casualty, because the agent gives to its natural effect not only those natural principles whereby it subsists, but also those whereby it is a cause of other things. Thus the animal, when begotten, receives from its begetter both the power of self-nourishment, and the power of generation. Therefore the effect tends to be like the agent, not only in the point of species, but also in the point of its casualty of other things. Now things tend to be like God, even as effects tend to be like the agent, as proved above. Therefore things have a natural tendency towards a divine likeness in this, that they are causes of other things. Moreover, a thing is most perfect when it is able to produce its light, for that light shines perfectly, which gives light to others. Now whatever tends to its own perfection, tends to a divine likeness. Wherefore a thing tends to a divine likeness from the very fact that it tends to be the cause of other things. Since however a cause, as such, is higher than its effect, it is evident that to tend in this way to a divine likeness, so as to be a cause of other things, belongs to the highest grade among things. Furthermore, a thing is perfect in itself before being able to cause another, as we have stated already. Hence to be the cause of other things is a perfection that accrues to a thing last. Since then the creature tends to a divine likeness in many points, this remains last, that it seek a likeness to God by being a cause of others. Wherefore Dionysius says Col. Hier. 3, that it is of all things most godlike to be God's company operator, in which sense the Apostle says we are God's coadjutors. Chapter 22. How things are directed in various ways to their respective ends. It may be shown from the foregoing that the last means whereby a thing is directed to its end is its operation, in various ways, however, according to the variety of operations. For some things have an operation whereby they move something else, such are heating and cutting, and some have an operation in being moved by another, such are being heated and being cut. Some operations are a perfection of an actually existing operator, and do not tend to the transmutation of something else. In the former aspect these differ from passion and movement, and in the latter from an action which effects a transmutation on some external matter. As an instance of such an operation we have understanding, sensation, will. Wherefore it is clear that things which are set to move or operate only, without moving or making anything themselves, tend to the divine likeness in that they are perfect in themselves, while those which make and move, as such, tend to a divine likeness, in that they are causes of other things, and that those which move through being moved tend to the divine likeness in both ways. The lower bodies, insofar as they are moved with natural movements, are considered to be moved only, and not to move except accidentally, for if a stone in its descent puts into motion something that stood in its path, it is an accident, and the same applies to alteration and other movements. Wherefore the end of such movements is that they attain to a divine likeness in the point of their being perfect in themselves, as having their proper form and their proper place. The heavenly bodies, however, move because they are moved, so that the end of their movement is to attain to a divine likeness in both respects. As regards their own perfection, inasmuch as a heavenly body may be actually where previously it was potentially, nor does it for this reason attain less to its perfection, although it retains its potentiality to be where it was before. For in the same way does primary matter tend to its perfection by acquiring actually the form which it had potentially before, although it ceases to have the one which it had before actually, for thus matter receives successively all the forms to which it has a potentiality, so that its whole potentiality is actualized successively, which could not happen all at one time. Wherefore, since a heavenly body is in potentiality to a particular whereabouts, even as primary matter is to a particular form, it attains to its perfection by the fact that its entire potentiality to a particular whereabouts is successively actualized, which could not happen simultaneously. Inasmuch as they move by moving, the end of their movement is the attainment of a divine likeness, in that they are causes of other things. Now they are the causes of other things, by causing generation and corruption and other movements in this lower world. Accordingly the movements of heavenly bodies, insofar as they are principles of movement, are directed to generation and corruption in the world beneath them. And it is not unreasonable that the movements of heavenly bodies conduce to the generation of these lower things, although these inferior bodies are of small account in comparison with the heavenly bodies, and yet the end should be of greater account than the means. For the generator's action tends to the form of the generated, and yet that which is generated is not of greater worth than the generator, but, in univocal agents, is of the same species with it, because the generator intends as its ultimate end not the form of the generated, which form is the end of generation, but the likeness to the divine being in the perpetuation of the species, and the diffusion of his goodness, by bestowing its specific form on others, and being the cause of other things. Likewise the heavenly bodies, although of more account than the lower bodies, nevertheless intend by means of their movements the generation of the latter bodies, and to bring to actuality the forms of things generated, not indeed as though this were their ultimate end, but as a means whereby to attain to an ultimate end, the divine likeness, to wit, in that they are causes of other things. We must take note, however, that a thing, according as it participates in a likeness to God's goodness, which is the object of his will, so too has it a share in a similitude to God's will, whereby things are brought into being and preserved. The higher beings, however, participate in a likeness to the divine goodness in a more simple and universal manner, but the lower beings, in a more particular and divided way. Wherefore between heavenly and lower bodies, we observe a likeness, not of equiparence, as in things belonging to the same species, but as that which is to be observed between the universal agent and a particular effect. Wherefore just as in this lower world the intention of the particular agent is confined to good of this or that species, so is the intention of the celestial body inclined to the common good of the corporeal substance, which by generation is preserved, multiplied, and increased. But since, as already stated, everything moved, as such, tends, as towards a divine likeness, to be perfect in itself, and since a thing is perfect in so far as it becomes actual, it follows that the intention of everything that is in potentiality is to tend to actuality by way of movement. Consequently, the more an act is posterior and perfect, the more is the appetite of matter inclined thereto. Therefore, the appetite whereby matter seeks a form must tend towards the last and most perfect act to which matter can attain, as to the ultimate end of generation. Now certain grades are to be found in the acts of forms. For primary matter is in potentiality, first of all, to the elemental form. While under the elemental form, it is in potentiality to the form of a mixed body, wherefore elements are the matter of a mixed body. Considered as under the form of a mixed body, it is in potentiality to a vegetative soul, for the act of such a body is a soul. Again, the vegetative soul is in potentiality to the sensitive, and the sensitive to the intellective. This is proved by the process of generation, for in generation we have first the fetus living with a plant life, afterwards with animal life, and lastly with human life. After this no later or more noble form is to be found in things subject to generation and corruption. Therefore the last end of all generation is the human soul, and to this does matter tend as its ultimate form. Consequently the elements are for the sake of the mixed body for the sake of living things, and of these plants are for the sake of animals, and animals for the sake of man. Therefore man is the end of all generation. And whereas the same thing is the cause of generation and preservation of things, the order of the preservation of things is in keeping with the aforesaid order of their generation. Hence we find that mixed bodies are preserved by the qualities becoming to the elements. Plants are nourished by mixed bodies, animals derive their nourishment from plants, and some that are more perfect and powerful from the imperfect and weak. Man employs all kinds of things for his own use, some for food, some for clothing. Hence by nature he was made naked, as being able to make himself clothes from other things, even as nature provided him with no becoming nourishment except milk, so that he might supply himself with food from a variety of things. Some he employs as a means of transit, for he is inferior to many animals in swiftness and sustaining power, as though other animals were furnished for his needs. And over and above he employs all things endowed with a sensitive life for the perfection of his intellectual knowledge. Wherefore of man is it said in Psalm 8:8, the words being addressed to God, "Thou hast subjected all things under his feet." And Aristotle says that man exercises a natural sovereignty over all animals. If, therefore, the movement of the heaven is directed to generation, and all generation is directed to man as the last end of this genus, it is evident that the end of the heavenly movement is directed to man as its last end in the genus of things subject to generation and movement. This is expressed where it is said that God made the heavenly bodies for the service of all the nations. Chapter 23. That the movement of the heaven is from an intellective principle. It can also be shown from the foregoing that the first principle that causes the heavenly movement is intellective, for nothing that acts according to its own species intends a form higher than its own, since every agent intends its like. Now a heavenly body, forasmuch as it acts by its own movement, intends the ultimate form, which is the human intellect, which is higher than any corporeal form, as we have proved above. Therefore the heavenly body acts to the effect of generation, not in respect of its own species, as the principal agent does, but in respect of the species of some higher intellectual agent, in relation to which the heavenly body is like an instrument in relation to a principal agent. Now the heaven acts to the effect of generation, inasmuch as it is moved. Therefore the heavenly body is moved by some intellectual substance. Again, whatever is in motion must needs be moved by another, as we proved above. Therefore the body of heaven is moved by another. Now this other is either wholly separated from it, or else it is united to it, so that what is composed of heaven and its mover is said to move itself, inasmuch as one part thereof is moved, and the other is mover. If this be the case, since whatever moves itself is living and animate, it follows that the heaven is animate, and not otherwise than with an intellectual soul, for it could not be animated with a nutritive soul, since in the heavenly body there is no generation or corruption, nor with a sensitive soul, since the heavenly body has no variety of organs. Therefore it follows that it is moved by an intellective soul. If, on the other hand, it be moved by an extrinsic mover, this will be either corporeal or incorporeal. If it be corporeal, it does not cause movement without being moved, for no body moves unless it be moved, as was shown above. So that this too will require to be moved by another. But as it is not possible to have an infinite series of bodies, we must come to some incorporeal first mover. Now that which is utterly separated from a body must be intellectual, as we have shown. Therefore the movement of the heaven which is first among corporeal beings, is caused by some intellectual substance. Moreover, heavy and light bodies are moved by their generator and by that which removes obstacles, as is proved in innate physics. 4. For it is impossible that their form be mover and the matter moved, for nothing is moved except a body. Now as the elemental bodies are simple, and there is no composition in them, except that of matter and form, so too are the heavenly bodies simple. Hence if they be moved as heavy and light bodies, it follows that they are moved per se by their generator, and accidentally by that which removes an obstacle. But this is impossible, for these bodies cannot be generated, because there is no contrariety in them and their movements cannot be hindered. Therefore these bodies must needs be moved by things that cause movement by a power of apprehension, which power cannot be sensitive, as we have proved. Therefore it must be an intellective power. Further, if the principle of the heavenly movement be from nature alone, without any kind of apprehension, it follows that it must be the form of the heavenly body, as is the case with the elements, for all those simple forms do not cause movement, they are principles of movements, since natural movements, like all other natural properties, follow from them. Now it is impossible that the heavenly movement follow the form of the heavenly body as its active principle, because thus the form is the principle of local movement, inasmuch as to a particular body, in respect of its form, is due a particular place, to which it is moved by virtue of its form that tends to that place. And because the generator gives this form, it is said to be a mover. Even so it is due to fire, in respect of its form, to be in a higher place. Now one place is not more due to a heavenly body in respect of its form, than another. Therefore nature alone is not the principle of the heavenly movement, and consequently the principle of its movement must be something that moves it by apprehension. Again, nature always tends to one thing, wherefore things that come from nature, come always in the same way, unless they be hindered, and this seldom happens. Therefore that which is essentially deformed cannot possibly be an end towards which nature tends. Now movement is essentially such, for that which is moved, as such, is conditioned otherwise now and before. Consequently nature cannot intend movement for its own sake. Therefore it intends through movement to obtain rest, which in relation to movement is as one to many, for a thing is at rest which is conditioned in the same way now as before. Accordingly if the heavenly movement were from nature alone, it would be directed to some kind of rest, whereas the contrary is the case, for it is unceasing. Therefore the movement of the heaven is not from nature as its active principle, but from an intelligent substance. Also, in every movement that is of nature as its active principle, if approach to a particular term be natural, recession from that term must be unnatural and contrary to nature. Thus a heavy body naturally seeks a lower place, and recedes therefrom unnaturally. Therefore if the movement of the heaven were natural, since it tends to the west naturally, it would be contrary to nature for it to return from the west to the east. But this is impossible, for nothing in the heavenly movement is violent or unnatural. Consequently it is impossible for nature to be the active principle of the heavenly movement. Therefore its active principle is some apprehensive power, which must be an intelligence, as we have proved above. Therefore the heavenly body is moved by an intelligent substance. And yet we must not deny that the heavenly movement is natural. For a movement is said to be natural, not only on account of its active principle, but also on account of its passive principle. This is evident in the generation of simple bodies, since such generation cannot be called natural in relation to the active principle. Because for a thing to be moved naturally by an active principle, it must have this active principle within itself, for nature is a principle of movement in a thing in which it is, whereas the active principle in the generation of a simple body is without. Therefore it is not natural by reason of its active principle, but only by reason of its passive principle, namely matter, wherein there is a natural appetite for its natural form. Accordingly the movement of the heavenly body, as to its active principle, is not natural, but voluntary and intellectual, while as to its passive principle it is natural, since a heavenly body has a natural inclination for that movement. This is made clear if we consider the relation of a heavenly body to its place. For a thing is passive and moved according as it is in potentiality, and it is active and moves according as it is in a state of actuality. Now a heavenly body considered in its substance, and as in potentiality, is indifferent to any place, even as primary matter is indifferent to any form, as we have stated. But it is otherwise with a heavy or light body, which, considered in itself, is not indifferent to any place, and has a definite place appointed to it by reason of its form. Wherefore the nature of heavy and light bodies is the active principle of their movements, while the nature of a heavenly body is the passive principle of its movement. Consequently we must not think that it is moved by violence, like heavy and light bodies, which are moved by us through our intelligence. For heavy and light bodies have a natural aptitude for a movement contrary to that with which they are moved by us, and so they are moved by us violently, albeit the movement of an animal's body, whereby that body is moved by the soul, is not violent to that body as animated, although it is violent in so far as that body is something heavy. On the other hand the heavenly bodies have no aptitude for a contrary movement, but only for that wherewith they are moved by an intelligent substance. Consequently it is both voluntary, as regards its active principle, and natural, as to its passive principle. That the heavenly movement be voluntary in respect of its active principle is not inconsistent with the fact that it is one and uniform, for all that the will is indifferent to many things and is not determined to any one. For just as nature is determined to one by its power, so is the will determined to one by its wisdom, by which the will is unerringly directed to one end. It is evident from the foregoing that neither approach to any one place nor recession therefrom is contrary to nature. For this happens in the movement of heavy and light bodies for two reasons. First, because the intention of nature, in heavy and light bodies, is determined towards one place, wherefore just as the body naturally tends thereto, So does it recede therefrom against nature? Secondly, because two movements, one of which approaches a given term and the other recedes therefrom, are contrary. If, however, we take not the last but a middle place in the movement of heavy and light bodies, both approach thereto and recession therefrom are natural because the whole movement comes under the intention of nature and the movements are not contrary, but are one continuous movement. It is the same in the movement of heavenly bodies because the intention of nature is not towards one determinate place, as we have said already. Moreover, the movement with which a body moved in a circle recedes from any given place, is not contrary to the movement with which it approaches towards it, but is one continuous movement, so that any given point in the heavenly movement is like a middle point, and not like the term in a straight movement. Nor does it make any difference, as to the present question, whether the heavenly body be moved by an intellectual substance united to it, so as to be its soul, or by a separate substance, nor whether each heavenly body be moved by God immediately, or none, and each be moved by the intermediary of created intellectual substances, or only the first heavenly body by God immediately, and the others through the intermediary of created substances. So long as we admit that the heavenly movement is caused by an intellectual substance. Chapter 24. How even things devoid of knowledge seek the good. If, as we have shown, the heavenly body is moved by an intelligent substance, and the movement of the heavenly body is directed to generation in this lower world, it follows that the generations and movements of these lower bodies proceed from the intention of an intelligent substance, for the intention of the principal agent bears on the same thing as that of the instrument. Now the heaven is the cause of the movements of lower bodies by reason of its movement with which it is moved by an intelligent substance. Consequently, it is as an instrument of an intelligent substance. Therefore, the forms and movements of the lower bodies are caused by an intelligent substance, and are intended by it as by a principal agent, and by the heavenly body, as by an instrument. Now the species of things caused and intended by an intellectual agent must pre-exist in his intellect, just as the forms of the products of art pre-exist in the mind of the craftsman and flow thence into his work. Consequently, all forms that are in these lower bodies, and all their movements flow from intellectual forms which are in the intellect of some substance or substances. Hence Boethius says that forms which are in matter originated in forms that are immaterial. In this respect the saying of Plato is verified, that separate forms are the principles of forms that exist in matter, although Plato held them to be per se subsistent, and to be the immediate cause of the forms of sensible bodies, whereas we hold them to exist in an intellect, and to cause lower forms through the heavenly movement. And since whatever is moved by anything per se and not accidentally, is directed thereby towards the end of its movement, since the heavenly body is moved by an intellectual substance, and the heavenly body, by its movement, causes all movement in this lower world, it follows of necessity that the heavenly body is directed to the end of its movement, by an intellectual substance, and consequently all lower bodies to their respective ends. Accordingly, it is easy to understand how natural bodies devoid of knowledge are moved and act for the sake of an end, for they tend to an end, as directed thereto by an intelligent substance, in the same way as an arrow, directed by the archer, tends to the mark, because as the arrow receives its direction to a fixed end through the aim of the archer, so too natural bodies receive an inclination to their natural ends from their natural movers, whence they derive their forms, powers and movements. Wherefore it is also clear that every work of nature is the work of an intelligent substance, because an effect is ascribed more especially to the direction of the first mover towards the end, than to the instruments which receive that direction. For this reason the operations of nature are seen to proceed in an orderly manner, even as the operations of a wise man. It is therefore evident that even things devoid of knowledge can work for an end, and desire good with a natural appetite, also that they seek a divine likeness, as well as their own perfection. Nor does it matter in which way we express it, the former or the latter, because by tending to their own perfection, they tend to a good, since a thing is good for as much as it is perfect, and according as a thing tends to be good, It tends to a divine likeness, since a thing is like unto God for as much as it is good. Now this or that particular good is so far appetible as it bears a likeness to the first goodness. Therefore the reason why a thing tends to its own good, is because it tends to a divine likeness, and not vice versa. It is clear therefore that all things seek a divine likeness as their last end. A thing's own good can be understood in several ways. First, in the sense that it is proper to that thing on the part of the individual. Thus an animal desires its own good, when it desires food, whereby its existence is preserved. Secondly, as being proper to that thing on the part of its species. Thus an animal desires its own good, forasmuch as it desires to beget offspring and to feed it, as well as whatever else conduces to the preservation or defense of the individuals of its species. Thirdly, on the part of the genus, and thus an equivocal agent, for instance the heaven, desires its own good, in causing. Fourthly, on the part of a likeness of analogy between effect and cause. Thus God, who is outside all genera, gives being to all things on account of his own goodness. This clearly proves that the more perfect a thing's power, and the higher its degree of goodness, the more universal its desire for good, and the greater the range of goodness to which its appetite and operation extend. For imperfect things extend no further than their own individual good, but perfect things extend to the good of the species, more perfect things, to the good of the genus, and God, who is most perfect in goodness, to the good of all being. Wherefore it is said by some, not without reason, that good, as such, is self-diffusive, because the better a thing is, the further does the outpouring of its goodness extend. And since, in every genus, that which is most perfect is the exemplar and measure of all that belongs to that genus, it follows that God, who is most perfect in goodness, and pours forth his goodness most universally, is in his outpouring the exemplar of all things that pour forth goodness. Now one thing becomes a cause of another by pouring forth its own goodness into that other. And so it is again evident that whatever tends to be the cause of something else, tends to a divine likeness, and yet tends to its own good. Consequently it is not unreasonable to say that the movements of heavenly bodies, and the actions of their movers, are in a way for the sake of these bodies that are generated and corrupted, and of less account than they are. For they are not for the sake of these as their last end, but by intending the generation of these, they intend their own good, and the divine likeness as their last end.